All right, good morning. Is it hooked up? Give me just a second here. So I have a message for you this morning, and I also have a title. And the title of my message is, He Will Kill Your Chickens. So I'm not an ordained man, so that takes care of things right there. You're not going to hear a conventional sermon this morning. So if you've come here with the hoping that you hear some eloquent speaker, we'll take care of that right now. The other thing is, I have a message that I believe is important for our generation. And other thing I think would be important for you to understand is who I'm as a person. So if you understand the spiritual gifts, I'm a prophet and I'm also a exhorter. So the pain I've felt in my life, usually your pain is a reflection of what you are. So what's your blazing strength is also your blazing weakness. So the exhorter, his challenge is he'll put the truth before relationship. So I assumed as a very young child that everybody wanted to know what I had to say. And that was a mistake, especially for my dad. My mom was a lot more gracious with me. And then the pain got so great in my life that there were certain times in my life that I really didn't want to live anymore. And I wasn't suicidal, but I just didn't want to get up in the morning, which is not normal for who I am. So during those times in my life, I realized that, you know, I wasn't enjoying life and I wasn't having any fun, but there's no reason why I couldn't make other people couldn't have fun and enjoy life. So during one of those periods of my life when it was really low, even Prozac wouldn't work. Yeah, I burned through drugs and I just like it wasn't even working for me. That's how bad it was. And then it would turn me into this zombie that all I wanted to do was sleep, and that was bizarre. So what I decided was I was going to focus on other people instead of myself. So I decided I was going to encourage somebody every day of my life. I want to encourage you guys, someone this morning, that when we make a commitment to do something in life, I believe God shows up. And he'll show up and give you the strength and the ability to follow through on your commitments. You read about covenants that are made in the Old Testament, the vows that people made. You don't hear a lot about that today. But they took their vows very seriously. And what was interesting to me, and there was never a day went by that God didn't lay on my heart somebody to encourage or send a note of encouragement. So it got pretty expensive buying all these cards. And so I started getting creative. So I'd send emails. And then I found out that I could buy books cheaper than I could buy a card. And I hooked up with this guy called Charlie Tremendous Jones. I'm just curious. Did anybody ever hear of Charlie Tremendous Jones? Well, he died now, but he was in Chambersburg. And his saying was, life is tremendous. And that's why they called him Charlie Tremendous Jones. But he also had a bookstore. So I got to know him. And I don't know if the children remember when I took them there to see him, but he passed away. Anyway, he would always give me his overruns on books for a very very low price, and I could buy books at $1 a piece, and that was cheaper than a card, and I figured that people would be quicker to throw the card away. Everybody throws their cards away after a while, unless they scrapbook, I guess. But I'd hand books out. So he got me into reading, and I really wasn't a reader until then. And I started reading the books I gave out because one of my things I put on myself is I wasn't going to give out a book I didn't read, you know. But I tend to like small books with allegories and life stories. It's really interesting when you get, and then for lunch break, sometimes my lunch break, I go to Goodwill store, and we have a what they call a Jubilee store, and I go through, because I can buy books for less than a buck. You guys go to Nearly New store and buy books? It's really cool. Anyway, you can buy them cheap. Keeps you from going out to eat and continuing to get overweight. So, but what's really funny is when you start seeing these books come back that you have given people. So I'd tear out the front page and send it off to somebody else. All right. So my discussion this morning is he will kill your chickens. You like that? Do you guys raise chickens? How many people have raised chickens in here? See, and that's one thing I think I think, you know, you raise some chickens too? The neat thing is everybody has raised some, most people raise chickens, so I figured I'd get on the same topic so we could all get on the same page. But, you know, we all raise chickens. Well, why do we raise chickens? Do you guys know why your mom and dad buy chickens? You do? Eggs. All right. And so they're easy to raise, you know, not a whole lot of maintenance. The cost of acquisition is pretty low, and they don't take much to take care of. So it's a low maintenance thing. So stay tuned. I'll tell you more about the chicken story. That was to get your attention. I want to talk to you about worldview. All right. So if you've, but I knew that worldview might overwhelm these guys. And by the way, I'm really talking to these guys this morning because they're your church next year. And if you guys don't invest in these guys up here, you're toast. It's over. It's going to last one generation. You guys just made a big move. I knew 10 years ago. That's what they tell me. I really don't know who you are. That's a good thing. But you made a big move. The most important aspect of that move is what you got on the front bench. All right? Jeremiah 29:11-13. One of my favorite verses. I have plans for you. Plans for your best interest and not destruction. I want to give you a future and a hope. When you call on my name and pray, I will listen. And when you seek and search me with all your heart, you will find me. That's Jeremiah 29:11-13. The South Carolina translation, I guess. You know, we were born to climb a metaphorical mountain. But the sad and sorry truth is, out of 7.6 billion people that were born to climb, the vast majority stay in the valley where the land is fertile, the harvest is phenomenal. There's four generation meeting every year to eat turkey and ham, and they never even get to the mountain. They never even take the challenge of the peaks. They just settle down in the valley, eating, sleeping, feeding, making new beings, all of who stay in the valley and say, well, one day, but you see, there's very few people that take off to the mountain. Because we're warned, the people that go there never come back. In fact, mothers warn their children of the dangers, and mothers go to sewing circle and discuss crazy mountain people. They discuss the great lengths, what happens to people if they go there and they never come back. And some mothers faint and are taken home on stretchers, examples to other mothers. If they do come back, they come back defeated. Because no one ever climbs a mountain and returns the valley. It would be like leaving Lancaster County and going to South Carolina. It would be like returning to death because God has created us to climb. Something else has happened. Some of us get about halfway up the mountain and forget where we are going. Now, this is the good part. So you get up on the mountain, and you forget where you're going. So you go about half of the mountain. You know what happens when you look out across the valley? Wow, look at the view of the from the mountain. This is awesome. You've been in the valley all this time, and you get up there on the mountain, you see the view. It's amazing.
You say, this is great. So you sit down and you, well, what's the first thing you do? You build a little house. And then you build a little fence. And then you get some chickens. Right? But you know, if you are a committed Christian, God's going to look down and he's going to say, he's going to burn down your house. He's going to tear down your fence. He's going to kill your chickens. You get that? Once you've lived on the mountain, there's no possible way for you to go back to the valley. And today I want to challenge you all to come to the mountain where crazy people live. Crazy people live on the mountain, and there's no top to that mountain. For those that are sold out for Christ, the Christian life is infinite climbing. So today I want to remind you of where we are going. If you choose the plan that God has for your life and not the plan that others would want to superimpose on you, you're going to lose your chickens. But there's good news. Those that experience extreme pain in life often experience extreme joy. You see, life is a reflection. And for a lot of us, it takes a long time for us to understand that. So I'm going to repeat it again. If you don't write anything else down today, write this down. Life is a reflection. Donnie, we got to get you reading. You see, something, do you guys ever go crabbing? Their retention's a lot better than yours. That's why I want to invest in these guys. Do you guys ever go crabbing? No? All right. You're not that far from the water, are you? You aren't that far. Life is a reflection. So if you guys ever went crabbing, I can't tell you this, but when you do go, when your dad does take you crabbing, okay? What I can tell you is just take a 5-gallon bucket, and that's what you hold your crabs in. You put a little water in there. But the point is when you, the first crab can get out of the bucket, so be careful, watching. But after you get the second crab, you're home free. They will never get out of the bucket. Do you know why? One crab will never let another crab out of the bucket. And this is a great life lesson, all right? Stay away from crabby people. If you ever meet up with a crab, flee. Because a crabby person will keep you in the bucket. So that's your life lesson. I got some more for you. You already heard that hurting people hurt people, right? Well, that's because if somebody's miserable, they want to make sure everybody else around them is miserable. We have this thing at work that we say, my motto is have fun or go home early, right? And I'm serious about that. If you're not having fun and you're acting like a grump, I say you strike one, shape up. Strike two, strike three, you're going home. You know why? Because when you're grumpy, you hold everybody hostage around you and they're all grumpy. All right? Try that at home too. Not my problem. One thing that's always interesting to me is you ever think about how quickly people want to associate with your pain instead of inviting you to rise above it? Ever think about that? Oh, yeah, the same pain. Oh, life is terrible. Yeah. Life is a reflection. You know, there's what does infinite climbing look like? Well, it begins where you are called to serve. If you're children and you're under 13, you learn to climb at home. And until you learn to serve faithfully at home, God has little use for you elsewhere. So that is the environment God has created for us to get it right before we fight or before we take flight. And, you know, the Jewish culture has that much better than we do. Do you know what bar mitzvah is?
Yes.
All right. What age is a boy at bar mitzvah?
13.
What age is a girl?
I don't think girls do that.
Yeah, bat mitzvah. 12. Something funny. That's a cool thing. Girls are more mature than boys. Did you know that? I mean, I actually heard noises up here on the front bench. That wasn't you, was it? I figured not. All right. So that's a cool thing for girls to know, is they mature better, quicker than boys. Sorry about that, guys. But the Jewish culture has that interest in an interesting way. They, at age 13, they celebrate a young boy coming to manhood. And we've got this thing where we talk about teenagers. Well, the Jewish culture doesn't have teenagers. They go right from being children to adults. You're an adult. Thanks for being in the men's class. That was great. Speak up next time. All right. The first thing that they're given to do is when they have this celebration, the next day at church, they call it synagogue, this young boy, 13 years old, he stands up in front of the church, synagogue, and he reads the scripture. Now think about what's going through that boy's head at 13 years old, and now he's reading the scripture to all these people much older than he is. You think that puts a little bit of responsibility in his heart? So they set him up right. They set him up right away to become what God has called them to be from the beginning. Then we have that 14 to 20 year old where you're young adults and you have the opportunities. I'm just going to tell you, I'm excited about this generation. I know there's a lot of doomsdayers and a lot of people saying about how terrible it is out there and all that kind of stuff, but I'm telling you guys, you got it down. It is great. You are in the most exciting generation of all time. You know you can go to China, round trip for $800. It wasn't even on my radar when I was your age. $800, you can go to China and back. Your worldview is much larger than mine was when I was your age. The opportunities to learn and to serve are unlimited. Going to Asia and Europe at your age wasn't even a consideration. Then we have the ages of 20 to 30. That's kind of our discovery ages when we find out who we are and what we like to do. And then comes the hard work stage of 30 to 40 where we have our families. And parents, if you're not teaching your children to climb by your example, you will be responsible for the faith of faithless generation. You are the stewards of our generation. I'm talking to myself, but we are the stewards of our generation. We will stand before God for the life that we've modeled for this generation. Because they're following you. You cannot hold your parents hostage for your choices. And you just see that so often. And shame on me, for so many years I held my parents hostage for where I was in life. And those were wasted years. Then we turn to ages 50 to 60, and it's less about what we do and more about who we influence. And, you know, your climbing days have really come to an end. And you have, if you've climbed well, you know how you have an awesome view of the valley. It'll soon be time to go to Pinecraft and play shuffleboard. But you have a powerful job to do. And that's my challenge for you this morning, is get behind this generation. Believe in them, pray for them, cheer them on, because it's not going to be long before you come to the dependency ages between 80 and 90, and the whole thing will be turned around. So what does infinite climbing look like? It's different for each of us. God has called different things into our lives for different places, different people, and different things. But one thing we have in common for those that have chose to climb in the Christian life is that we all need a life of brokenness. So here's another thing for you to think about and write down. We can only forgive to the level which we are broken. You cannot forgive if you are not a broken person. And so if you want to be a more forgiving person, you have to be broken. And if you were to ask me what I think the epidemic, one of the epidemics of our generation is, we got a bunch of unbroken men. So when you have a bunch of crazy women running around, it's usually because there's a bunch of unbroken men behind. You know, women's problems go away when men are doing their job. And I, you know, I see too often where when women are in control, it's because the men are, that we have absentee men, we have unbroken men, men that aren't doing their job. The Christian life is an ongoing journey of brokenness, and we choose. The choice is ours. We can climb with a smile on our face and a thankful heart and joy on our step, or we can become bitter and miserable and thankless. Following brokenness in our life can be our most fruitful and purposeful times of our life if we are fully confronted what God has for us and allow ourselves to be broken in it. I know of no story really that illustrates that better than the story of Job and losing the support of his wife and his closest friends. When we see ourselves as victims, we live in the past and we wallow in our pain. And there's a lot of counseling out there that spends way too much time in that junk, because that was all intended in our best interests, not to destroy us, to make us better people. The worst thing that can happen to you is your greatest opportunity, if you see it that way. I want to be respectful, because if the people are trying to help other people and go back in their past and dig up all the garbage, well, God bless you. But it's a waste of time. In most cases. If. You know, as human beings, we want something to hook on. All we want to do is hook our junk on something. We're always looking for a hook. Think about that. But when you give up the hook and you take ownership of your life, it's a beautiful thing. There's a great little movie, if you want to Google it sometime and look at it, it's called the 100/0 Principle. It's when you take 100% of your responsibility for your life, the return is more than 100%. So I want to just talk briefly about 9 obstacles of brokenness. First, self-efficiency. You know, when you're young and full of energy, and it sounds like there's a lot of young people here as far as young marrieds, you know, strength and brute power, brute willpower, you have it. And we can seemingly do things and not need other people to do it. Our dependency on others is minimal. But being a Christian is not being independent. It's about being in relationship with Christ and also with others. And you know, the story of that reminds me, you know, the story of that illustration is the story of Absalom. I'm curious, have any of you ever read the book called The Tale of Three Kings? You ever heard of that book? I know Don didn't, but anybody else? You read the book? That's a book I plead with my children to read every year. It's a really small book. And you can read it actually in one evening. Your wife can probably do it within an hour or two. But it's a very small book, but it's a book, it's an allegory on brokenness, and it's the story of David, Absalom, and Saul. The Tale of Three Kings by Gene Edwards. Another thing in getting our way of brokenness is our talents and our gifts. Our giftedness can be a curse, like I explained to you. Our most gifted are the most challenged to see their need of Christ. Another is a misplaced trust. You know, we need to have our complete trust in God. In times like these, faith in God is imperative. Wealth is another obstacle of brokenness. Doesn't have to be, but it too often is. Money and material assets can be so deceiving. I always like the story of Zach Poonen. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He wrote a book called The New Wine and New Wineskins, and it's a great little book. And he talks about the story over in India. To own a house is like unbelievable. I mean, it's like you'd have the best tent in the world. That would be like owning a house in India. Well, he'd go to work every day, and the last thing on his mind when he went around, the last thing he'd do is look at his house on the way out. You know, oh, yeah, it's still there, you know. And he'd ride his bike, and he was a wealthy man because he had a mud hut and a bike. And he was really getting up in the world. So he would come home at night. All day it would bother him. You know, what if somebody's burning down my house? We think, well, who cares if somebody burns down a mud hut? You know, nothing to it, right? But they literally burn each other down because they're a bunch of crabs. They don't want to see other people succeed. So they tried to burn down they destroy it. If somebody had a house, they'd destroy it. Well, you know, it consumed him. It was almost driving him crazy. He'd come home on his bike and come around the corner. Oh, my house didn't burn down, right? Finally, he said, you know what? This is terrible. I'm not even enjoying life. You know, all these things I have, it's no value. And he got to the point that he could see his house, come around the corner and see his house in flames with a smile on his face. And he knew he was a happy man.
So wealth can do tricks to your mind. Play games in your head. Image and appearance. This is a good one. You know, it's funny, but women have a different challenge this area than men. I don't think men really care that much. Usually don't care that much how they look as much as men do, but we're more inclined, at least when we get older and lose it all or get fat and bow-legged, we're more concerned about our accomplishments and our reputation and our identity. But you know, I remember about a girl, there was a girl that in school, I remember her name was Sandra, and she wasn't even good looking. She's actually homely, and she even smelled bad. But you know, as I think about her, even now, I don't think about that part of it. I think about the beauty she was as far as spirit. She was the most kind, caring person. She came from a home that wasn't that good. So she wasn't taught that, and I'm sure any kind of deodorant would have been off the radar in that home. But one day, yeah, well, I'll stop there. But anyway, Sandra was just a dear person, and she was the one person in the class that, and she got mocked at. She got, people made fun of her, but she always had a smile on her face. The beauty of a person's character is so much more important than their looks or their status. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is that of Boaz and the story of Ruth. Boaz was a businessman of great reputation, character, and position. Now, Boaz and Ruth 4, I'm going to just read Ruth 4, 1 to 10. It says, now Boaz went up to the gate. And by the way, going to the gate in the city in those days would have been like going to a fellowship meal. All right, because that's where they all came together and that's where they all hung out. And so they came to the fellowship meal. They sat down there, and behold, the closest relative of Naomi passed by. Now, if you remember the story, Boaz couldn't marry Ruth because there was another relative in line that should have married her to retain their name, because keeping the name back then was a big thing. So the closest relative of Naomi passed by, and he called out to him and said, come over here and sit down, my friend. I need to talk to you. So he sat down, and then Boaz called out 10 other men to come over here, smart man, of the elders of the city, and said, come over here. Then he said to the closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell this piece of land which belongs to our brother Elimelech. So we need to discuss this. Buy it before the elders of my people. If you redeem it, redeem it. But if you don't, tell me so I can. If there's no one but you to redeem it, then I am the next one in line.
And the man said, I'll redeem it. And then Boaz said, on the day that you buy the field from Naomi, you must also take Ruth, the Moabitess, as your wife, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up a name of the deceased on his inheritance. Now the closest relative said immediately when he said that, he said, the closest relative said, I can't redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of the redemption, for I cannot redeem it. It was the custom in those days in Israel concerning the redemption of the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this sealed the deal. So the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. He removed the sandal. And then Boaz said to the elders of the people, you are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belongs to Elimelech and all that belongeth to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up a name of the deceased and of on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from the brothers and from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. So in today's language, that's like our children marrying someone from kids' class. Do you know what I mean? So the whole story of Ruth hinges on that one experience. And that one experience was this man did not want to redeem because he'd have to marry Ruth. And he said, I can't do that. It's going to ruin my reputation in the community. I ain't going to do that. This man said, you know what? I'll pay the price. You guys all heard it? I'm paying the price. That's leadership. Leadership is making choices that not everybody's going to understand. This is a great leadership story. But even more than that, it's a redemption story. What will you do to redeem your generation? Will you lose your reputation to redeem your generation? Another thing that works against brokenness is control. We all want to have a control of the situation, and it can be humbling to be honest and transparent and vulnerable. And then we have that whole thing of self and selfishness, power, position, authority. It can consume us. And my favorite saying of that is C.S. Lewis. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but I'll read it to you. It says, to love it all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully around your hobbies and your little luxuries. Avoid any entanglements. Lock it safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, dark, safe, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, and irredeemable. The other thing that works against our brokenness is our response. The choice is ours. As humans, we want to hook our stuff on other things and other people. But until we take 100% accountability for what our life, regardless of the surroundings and circumstances, we are on a destructive path down the mountain. God allows every person and every event into your life for a reason and a season. I believe God allows every person, even the ones up the street, every person, Don, I'm sorry, I came this morning, every person, God allows every person in your life for a reason. And a season. I won't be here long, Don. He'll soon be over. We are stewards of these opportunities, and what the devil means for evil, God will always leverage for his glory and growth, and our growth. You know, there's a lot of people talk about stopping halfway up the mountain, and it's usually at that age of 40, so you guys are getting there. I know, you know, a lot of people talk about buying their Harley. I actually know what that feels like at 40. When I became 40 years old, this is ridiculous. I'm not 40 years old. I didn't feel like 40. My wife said I didn't act like 40. Anyway, but it does, there, you know, you kind of come to reality that you're starting to go a different, life is starting, there's more life starting to be behind you than in front of you type of thing. And the seasons of life are a beautiful thing, especially if we prepare for them. So my encouragement to you is prepare for 40 and prepare for 50. And then you'll be more prepared for 60 and you'll be delighted at 70. You know, that's 10 to 20 years old, that's kind of your discovery, exploration type of life. And then 20 to 30, you just have tireless energy and zeal to serve and work. Then 30 to 40, you kind of have your career stage. That's when you kind of decide what you wind up, you know, building mini barns or something. And then that's also the time you're raising your family. It's a pretty, you guys are heading into some challenging times because a lot of energy is going to be consumed. But 40 and 50, so few people prepare for that. And I'd like to challenge you to study Numbers 4 sometime. It's very interesting. In Numbers 4, 15 times it talks about the age of a man to serve in the temple. Does anybody know what that age is? It was 30 to 50. So the age of a man to serve in the temple is 30 to 50. But what the most significant thing about that to me was what the man, when he turned 50, what he was supposed to do. It was very explicit. When the man turned 50, his job is to go back and mentor the 30-year-old. So if any of you guys are 50 years or older, you better be, if it's not your children, you better be mentoring somebody else, because that is part of God's cycle for humankind to sustain itself spiritually. You know, we seem to all have it together when it comes to how do we sustain ourselves financially. It's the part that really messes with us is the part to sustain ourselves spiritually, all right? You know, when you turn 50 to 60, it's much less about what you do and a lot more about who you influence. And then that 70 to 80 years old, it's about faith and belief. That's cheer your generation on. So I'm going to challenge you to believe in crazy people that climb mountains. You only need to read church history. Every one of us have a role to play in other people's lives. A simple blessing can be used by God in another's life to make eternal impact. The devil can minimize in your mind what you can do, but do not allow other people to discourage you from what one word of encouragement can do for another person. I think it was Charles Wesley, that traveling evangelist, met him at the gate. He was a bad boy. He met him in the gate, and he put his hand on his shoulder, and he said, "Someday you're going to be a man of God." And that was what the inspiration that made Charles Wesley go on to be who he is. In fact, Charles Wesley, one of his favorite sayings from Charles Wesley, I enjoy his catch on fire and people come and watch you burn. Now, he said a little different, I think, but, you know, that would be another challenge. Catch on fire here and people come and watch you burn. Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, we're probably our worst enemy. I'm going to tell you a story about a bird now. You like stories? This is about a Canadian bird in honor of our Canadians that are here. I think God gave us humor as a gift for our survival to navigate life. So here's a little reminder. When there's insensitive people in your life and you need to navigate that. So the story was about a Canadian bird that didn't want to fly south. And he said to himself, "You know what, this is ridiculous. I'm not taking this miserable long flight this year. I won't be long till spring. I'll just stick it out here. But about January, give or take a little bit, he woke up and it was dreadfully cold, okay? It actually gets cold up north, all right? And he said, you know what? I can't take this anymore. And he was miserable. He said, I'm out of here. So he took flight and he got up about 1,000 feet and started to drizzle. Now, do you know what happens when 1,000 feet, when it starts to drizzle? It means your wings ice up. So he said, oh, you got to be kidding. Here I am, about to die. I get up in the, finally get up in the air here, and I start heading south, and it starts to drizzle, and he started gliding back. He was froze, you know. He started gliding back down, and luck would have it, he landed in a Canadian barnyard, right? So he laid in the barnyard, right? And you know what? This is the pits. Here I am, about to die, laying in a barnyard. About that time, a Canadian cow came by, and the cow stepped over the bird, and he didn't hit, and he didn't step on it. It was a beautiful thing, but as he was passing over the bird, he plopped on the bird. The bird says, you got to be kidding. Here I am about to die, and somebody plops on me. This is terrible. Life is the pits. Hey, he said, this ain't too bad after all. He started to warm up because, and he said, this ain't all that bad. And he put his head back and he started to sing. Here there was a Canadian cat in the barnyard. The cat never saw one of those things sing. So the cat comes over, wipes the stuff off the bird and ate it. Seven lessons I want to teach you here. Now, this is serious stuff, so listen up, okay? Procrastination is going to kill you, all right? Get that down. Complainers will always wind up in the barnyard of life, all right? Few will ever connect to your condition in life. Just take that. Few will ever get it. Not everybody that wipes that stuff off of you is your friend, all right? When you're dying, try to see the good around you. Not everybody that takes that stuff off of you is your, not everybody that wipes that stuff off of you is your friend. Not everybody that plops on you is your enemy. But this is the big one. When you get plopped on, keep your mouth shut. All right, so this is my conclusion. Never stop learning, dying. Knowledge will set you free to experience life like you never realized possible. And wisdom will keep you on a course to safely reach eternity. Give, 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 and give some more. Life is all about giving. Give 100%. And you will always receive more than 100% in return. You know, our immediate default is almost always money. But time and talent often cost us more, is appreciated more, and delivers a greater value and meaning than money. We were created for battle, so stay engaged. If you do go to Pinecraft, you may play some shuffleboard and discuss everybody's crazy kids that went off to the mountains. Or you can invest in this generation and be rewarded, will be out of this world. The reward you get for that will be out of this world. Life is a battle for balance, and then we die. And then our things fall off. But then we go home to heaven, and we can experience eternal balance with Jesus Christ. Yesterday ended last night. Don't look back. Keep your eye on the goal and climb. Like Esther, God has created every single one of you in this room for such a time as this. And we all live in a unique space of time where we have a unique job to do. All we need to do is believe that and believe that God will show us that way. It's just your job to discover his plan. Esther 4:14, for such a time as this is a time to leave the valley and begin to climb. So I'll just leave this with you. We are all born to climb. There's joy in the journey, and there is a reward for those that climb. Thank you.
How many here really enjoy going to a big, tall, steep mountain and physically climbing that mountain? Here's a few. I was sitting there remembering my experience last fall with Brady, climbing that brutal mountain. And, you know, I don't think I told anybody this, but when I got to the top and I was sitting there and I was one of the last ones up, you wouldn't know it looking at me. I'm not overweight. I should be fit. I should have been, like, right up that mountain. But, whew, man, that thing was brutal. But I was up there, and I took my hat off and put it down over my eyes because, you know, I was crying a little bit. It was pretty rough. And it wasn't just the climbing, but, you know, it was the whole experience of doing it with my friends. You know, we got up to the top, and I was able to sit down, take a break. There was some refreshments, and there was, you know, a bunch of you guys were there, and just the whole experiencing that community around that rough stuff. So anyways, that's what I was thinking about when Lyndon was encouraging us to get out of that valley and head to the mountains. And I was remembering my experience in Switzerland when I was climbing the mountains, but I wasn't doing it on foot. I was either in a car or in a cable car or something, and that's a much more efficient way to get up the mountain. But thanks for sharing, Lyndon. I was blessed and encouraged. You know, it's, you said when you're 30 to 40 is when you're raising your families, and that's the stage that I'm in now. My oldest is fixing to turn 10, and I think sometimes I forget how important it is for me to be investing in my children instead of all this other stuff that I do. And, you know, what good is it if I do well at Liberty Storage Solutions if I do not do well with my own children in my home? And I need to keep, it's important, I think it's important for me to keep my priorities straight and invest in my children. Because Lyndon shared earlier in the men's Sunday school time that being a dad is the one thing that can never be replaced. And that kind of stuck kind of deep. So we are at closing time. Is there anything someone would like to share before we close?